You're listening to the Yes Music Podcast, one fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. Welcome to episode 3 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulroy. Last week, as you may remember, I mentioned as many friends as I could, but I missed out one of the biggest friends of the podcast, and that's Herbert Bebetow. I do hope I've pronounced that correctly, Herbert. He's the one who set me the challenge of providing a transcription for each of the episodes, and I've got a little way with that so far, but I'll get back to you as soon as I manage to do some more of that. Please remember the ways to get involved on the site, www.yesmusicpodcast.com, and there you can subscribe through an RSS reader, or iTunes, or email. And email updates are about to change, but I'll explain that more in a blog post soon. You can leave comments on the website, on the show notes there. You can also get involved via Twitter. At the moment, we've got over 150 Twitter followers for the show, which is fantastic. Still waiting for that elusive first voicemail message, which I will definitely play on the show. You can call 0844 579 6949 and use the mailbox number 39417. One very exciting new departure for the Yes Music Podcast is that I've got 3 interview specials lined up. These are very good friends of the podcast, and you'll find out more when I manage to get those done via Skype. If you'd like to be featured and talk about your love of Yes, then please do get in touch through all the ways that I've just mentioned. So this week the featured album is the Yes album. As it says on the back, it was produced by Yes and Eddie Offord in autumn 1970. I wonder if the production by Eddie Offord is one of the keys to the changes that we're going to see. Perhaps it was that with a combination of the first big personnel change of the band, which was the departure of guitarist Peter Banks and the arrival of Steve Howe. I listened to this album while I was preparing this through headphones, and it really made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. It was an amazing experience to listen to it again in that way. If you haven't done it recently, then do that. What must it have been like to experience this album at the time? It must have been an absolute revelation. If you're someone who remembers what it was like to hear it for the first time back in 1970, then please let me know what it was like. Compared with the first 2 albums, there's clearly something very different going on here. Right from the opening of the first track, Yours Is No Disgrace, which is still part of the live repertoire, and interestingly credited to Yes, so written by the whole band, you can clearly see this is very different from those first 2 albums. The lyrics mark the beginning of the slightly bizarre tradition of Yes lyrics. Do they bear analysis? I'm not sure. I tend to try and enjoy the sound of the lyrics like poetry rather than get too hung up on the meaning. Maybe that's a good thing sometimes. So the opening of this track is a little bit Banks-like with the chords, but then Steve Howe breaks into those characteristic rapid runs of his. One of the interviews I'm going to do via Skype soon is with a guitar specialist, to hopefully understand exactly what Howe is doing and how it's different from Banks and other guitarists. I'm no guitarist, so I really don't know what's going on. But for me, something definitely is very special going on this album, with the inclusion of Howe for the first time. This track has a feeling of space. It's got a suspension of the pulse, which makes it sound mystical to me. The vocals feature the same kind of texture as the first 2 albums. So this is probably to do with the fact that it's being sung by the same people, although Steve Howe is credited as a vocalist as well. But perhaps it's something to do with the treatment, the arrangement, and the production. And is this down to Eddie Offord? Possibly it is. So we've got Howe playing intricate, sweet, playful melodic lines and patterns, most unlike Peter Banks' style on the first 2 albums. And we can see the songs of the first 2 albums developing now into full-blown pieces. And the natural endpoint of this progression is something like Tales from Topographic Oceans, of course. Tony Kaye also adds innovation. He was playing piano and Hammond organ exclusively on the first 2 albums, but now we see the first appearance in Yes Music of the Moog synthesizer. And interestingly, it's mentioned on the back of the album. Is this more associated with Rick Wakeman? Not by those people who know Yes's music. Here's Tony Kaye leading the way with the first appearance of this Moog. So we've got a combination of organ and Moog on this track. Is it overdubbed? I don't know. I mean, maybe it is. The classic picture that you have of Rick Wakeman. Multi-keyboard player with all the keyboards stacked around him. Maybe Kaye was doing something similar here, I'm not sure. So as I say, it was mentioned on the back of the album, the fact that he was using a Moog. And this trend for specifying exactly what equipment was used carried on and has been a real tradition in rock music, as I'm sure you know. So we've got a variety of moods and feels within this one track. We've got some archetypal Squire walking bass lines, listen out for that. And the Steve Howe solo, which kind of works through the material. Again, it's a bit like that development section we talked about last time in classical sonata structure. There are keyboard swoops, very characteristic. And Howe always seems to be looking for a variety of tone. And remember, he was really, and still is, multi-instrumental. You've got acoustic guitars, various electric guitars, as you can see in the live performances. I'm sure you've seen videos and photographs of all those instruments Steve Howe uses, some of them on stands so he can swap quickly between them. And there's also this instrument mentioned on the back cover called the Vocalia. Is that how you pronounce it? Vocalia? There seems to be some weird controversy over whether this instrument actually exists. It's some kind of Portuguese guitar. There's a more sing-along chorus, but different to the first two albums. This is definitely characteristic Yes now. It's an immersive soundscape, a fantastic groundbreaking soundscape. The end of this track builds and spirals upwards into nothingness, leaving you drained and wanting more of the same. But what do Yes do characteristically in the second track? It's something completely different. Now this is the solo guitar piece by Steve Howe, called The Clap. Now, despite what Anderson says very audibly as the song begins, he says this is a song called The Clap. Well, firstly, it's not a song, there's no lyrics on it at all. It's just a solo by Steve Howe. Now, Steve Howe, I believe, in later years was rather irritated that this became known as The Clap because of its slightly odd connotations. I think it's really only supposed to be called Clap, as in clap your hands. So here was Yes breaking with convention yet again. This is a live recording and just a world away from the sound and style of the opening track. You can compare it with live elements in future studio albums. 90125, the cinema track, appears to be live. Is it? Don't know. Let me know if you know. And there are some crowd noises in the middle of Release on Tormato. If you know of any other examples of Yes using live sections in studio albums, then let me know. What amazes me is this is the first time that Steve Howe, is featured on a Yes album, and yet he's got the confidence to put a completely live track on there of just him playing a solo. A fantastic solo, certainly is, but a solo nevertheless. It sounds to me like a fantastic mixture of rock, folk and blues, but again, I'll defer to the knowledge of my interview guest when we get that far. However, certainly, the drive of the piece is amazing. It's like an unstoppable juggernaut. There's motion from start to finish, energy, virtuosic playing, a lot of light and shade, and I would say quite a bit of fun and humour in there as well. Moving on then to Starship Trooper. Obviously, it's another example of the Yes astral theme, and it's the first example of a song by Yes with deliberate, named, quasi-classical sections. You've got A, B and C, Life Seeker, Disillusion and Worm. And interestingly, all the different sections there are credited to different writers. Anderson the first, Squire the second, Howe the third. It's the first truly epic production of Yes, with sections which segue into each other seamlessly despite wildly differing tempos and feels. I think it's remarkable that they managed to achieve this in the first example of this epic production. Anderson's vocals cut through the sometimes complex textures beneath, particularly creative drum patterns by Bill Bruford. And it sounds to me like there's a flute in there. There's no mention of flute on the album cover, only recorders on Your Move section of I've Seen All Good People. So is there a flute in there? I think there is. Listen out for that. We've got another lovely walking bass line from Squire, which really explores the range of pitch of the instrument. And at times it's very complex, as you'd expect from Squire. There's a section of guitar which echoes the clap style again. And in the final section, it starts building up the tension from some repeated ostinato parts. And this build-up of tension really reminds me of things like Tubular Bells, Mike Oldfield track, where he adds more and more instruments and parts. Something like Wishbone Ashes' The King Will Come, the start of that is very elongated, builds up the tension from very quiet to eventually very loud. And in terms of classical orchestral music, and I'll put a link to these both in the show notes for this week, there's a piece called The Pines of Rome, and the finale of that works in something like the same kind of way. It's a piece by an Italian composer called Respighi. But perhaps the best known in classical music is the Ravel's Bolero, where you get a crescendo and a building right from the beginning of the piece to the end. But back to Starship Trooper. I think this is the most sustained build-up in rock history. You can tell me different, of course. What I would suggest is that you don't try driving while you're listening to this part of this song. While you do listen to it, though, listen out for what each instrumentalist does to heighten the tension. Every single one has a different technique. It all leads to the triumphant and tumultuous Howe solo at the end, and this is Steve Howe in real Axe Hero mode, but in perfect Yes style, over the top of the huge throbbing bass and keyboards ground. And the parallel to this is something called a ground bass. Now, if you've listened to something like Pachelbel's Canon in, again, classical music, you'll see what a ground bass is. It's a pattern which repeats again and again at the bottom with everything else happening over the top, and that's what I think Yes have achieved here as well. So how do Yes follow that triumph up? Well, they go straight on to I've Seen All Good People. And this is also a key ingredient for many of Yes shows to this day. We see the sections again. We've got section A, Your Move by Anderson, section B, All Good People by Squire, and that's interesting that they've got different composers there, as much of the material is actually the same, just given different treatments. There's this strange chess imagery going along in the vocals. Have a listen out for that. It sort of describes what happens in a chess match. We've got beautiful vocal harmonies plus guitar, and it's another uplifting theme to the song. The addition of the Colin Goldring recorders put this piece firmly in 70s mode. They even mention Instant Karma. And there's, borrowed from John Lennon, there's All We Are Saying Is Give Peace a Chance. But I think it's a perfect accompaniment in mood and feel having the recorders in there. For the first time, there's an actual break between the sections. Before you go on to the All Good People section, there's a short silence. And this is an interesting reworking and rearrangement of material, as I said before. Still, with the original vocals, it gets more rock and roll orientated. Not as much as the live version, if you've seen that, but possibly that's partly due to the different drumming style of Alan White, who features in most of those most well-known live versions. It's another large-scale production, but there's more emphasis in this piece on the melodic, repeated vocal theme. Then we have Adventure. Now, this feels a bit more like the sound of the first two albums to me. It's a much shorter song. There's a stretched-out tempo, like in the first two. There's a contrast between the verse and the chorus and other sections. There's a more traditional form and format to it. I think it's a good song, but in the context of the others on here, it feels like a bit of a filler, a bit of a B-side, especially against the other massive productions. It's slightly odd the way it fades at the end, and the piano improvisation doesn't sound 100% convincing to me towards the end. So then we go back finally to the big production values for the last track, which could really be the tagline for the whole group over the years, over 40 years now of the group, Perpetual Change. It's got a serious rock opening with the heroic guitar of Steve Howe again, but it breaks down into lyrics with, underneath, hints of that walking tempo bass pattern again. It's a very strong melody in this song. It has different sections, but no deliberate names this time. This is another track which makes the hairs stand up on the back of my neck. It's absolutely wonderful, the way that the verse swings into the chorus section, and back into the verse again. Now, when we've got that chorus, we have a contrapuntal effect, and what that means is two different sides. It comes from classical music again, it comes from church music, contrapuntal meaning two sets of musicians, one on either side of the space. And this is achieved by having a chorus and Anderson singing two different parts, and these are split between the stereo in the chorus, and it adds to some pretty spine-tingling effects. There's a semi-improvised guitar solo, and there's another of those ostinato patterns with drums, keyboards, which slides to the left in the stereo, and then elaborate improvised parts added on the right-hand side of the stereo. It's an amazing effect. Very simple, but amazing. The way it swings again into the chorus is one of the most amazing and startling effects that I've heard in rock music. You mustn't listen to it on headphones to get the full effect. Is this production down to Eddie Offord? If so, I think it ranks as some of the most imaginative creative use of, for the time, cutting-edge technology in the studio. Just have to remind ourselves that only a few years before this record, the Beatles were still messing about with simulated stereo. Do you remember that? With the instruments on one side and the vocals on the other side? So in this track, repeated vocal harmonies play out with Steve Howe pushing the boundaries with a solo extravaganza. It's a shame, really, that it's faded out at the end. Would have been nice to know what Steve did. So overall, it's the Yes album which ushers in the classic sound of the Yes band that we know and love. It's the basis for the main sequence of albums, and I think it embodies the creativity, the production values, the innovation, huge album-spanning forms and instrumental and vocal virtuosity that are the watchwords of Yes to this day. If you haven't listened to it on headphones recently, go and do it now. As I said in my recent tweet, you won't be disappointed. So that's about it for this week. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed it. Next week we move on to the next studio album, the iconic Fragile, with the addition of the final piece of the Yes classic jigsaw, Rick Wakeman, on keyboards. So the homework for this week: go and listen to Fragile, and also get involved at www.yesmusicpodcast.com by following the show at Yes Music Podcast on Twitter. Send me an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, or I'll say it again, leave a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 and use the mailbox number 39417. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.